Thank you for tuning into the Fab Intro Show. Everyone, wherever you are, whatever place you're in, whatever device you're using, this is Bill Russo, and I'm here with my co-host, Anthony LoFaso. This is the Fab Intro Show, where we bring to you many people, many ideas, many places, many products, whether it's media or otherwise, introducing you to what's going on out there and having great conversations with the guests that we bring on. So let me just introduce my co-host Anthony LoFaso, who has a few words for you. Anthony?
Hello, Bill, and it's great to be back here in the beautiful downtown Marine Park. And the great, beautiful weather today, just fantastic. And it's great to be here on the Fab Intro Show. And I think we're going to talk about the Fab Intro Show a little bit later on, but we have great guests today. We have Dr. Ferdinand Visco, who's been our guest several times, and we have Dr. Vince Liberi, who has been on our show, not only been on our show, but has taken our place on more than one occasion and done a great, masterful job as usual.
Yeah, Vince Lapari is quite a gentleman, quite a man. He has a great background in media and in journalism, and we're just so delighted to have him here. He is a Brooklynite, and welcome to the Fab Intro Show, Vince. Okay.
Without any further ado, I think we should be talking to Vinny, and Vinny will be on our program on any particular occasion when Bill and I can't make it, which is from time to time. But we want to talk about, you know, let's go back to the beginning. You were in the broadcast industry, the television industry, for a great many years.
I was, and I just want to let you know that the last time I was called Vinny was in the old neighborhood.
Be careful, Anthony.
Do you prefer Vincenzo?
Vinny is fine. Vinny's fine.
Vinny's okay. You want Vincent?
It brings back good memories.
Well, we hope that you're comfortable with that. If you're comfortable.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So you began in broadcasting at quite a young age.
Well, let's see. I started actually in college is when I was first introduced to broadcasting. I was, in those days in the 60s, everyone had a guitar to play. And we all, you know, played guitar and sang folk songs. I was one of those. And I had a friend who worked for the radio station, WDUQ, which was a radio station for Duquesne University. And I went to, and he said to me, he said, hey, you know, we have this folk show, this music show on the radio, and we'd love to have you. You can sing and play your guitar. So I did. I went there, and I did that, and we had a great show, and it was a lot of fun. But while I was there, I started to look around, and I saw the radio station. Well, you know, with the wire service machines, you know, spitting out all the news and the little newsroom and the disc jockey doing the show and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of was interesting. So I not that I ditched the guitar, but at least I put it aside for a moment and I started to work for the radio station. And that's how I got sort of got to like broadcasting, communications, and it was sort of, I became addicted to it. It was a real passion for it. And that from there, when I graduated, and I was a philosophy major in school, asked me what I was going to do after I graduated, right, with a philosophy degree. You know, not much. So when I graduated from school, I started to work as a DJ, a newsman for WBVP in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania.
Beaver Falls, isn't that where Joe Namath comes
that's
from?
Right. Joe Namath was, that's right, he was, I don't know if he was born, but he was definitely raised there.
And he was raised in Beaver Falls.
He was a high school football star, and you would go to the local restaurant or the local greasy spoon, as we call it, and you'd see pictures of him with the rest of the football teams. They had won a number of high school championships.
And he wasn't well known except within the Beaver Falls community at that time.
That's right. But he was when by the time I wound up in Beaver Falls, he was, because he already had won the Super Bowl in 1968.
Oh, okay. Then he was well known.
So he was fairly well known.
You know, I started the same way. My mother took me out of the second, third, fourth, and fifth grade to go to radio programs. And when I went to radio shows like Arthur Godfrey and Ethel and Albert, which no one would remember that show. And, of course, the Archie show, and I found out that Archie was like 56 years old and bald, and if you remember Archie and those things. And I was intrigued by the people in the control room. They seemed to be so smart. They were in that control room touching buttons and looking at dials, and I said, that was for me, and I got the radio bug.
Yeah, and it was also listening to some of these personalities on the radio, and they had these really beautiful voices, and it was a whole trick. It was a magic to radio. And in some ways, even though I went into television later in my career, there is magic to radio that doesn't exist in television.
You're right.
Because when a person's listening to the radio, that person is imagining the whole situation in their own minds.
Yes.
And the person who's actually broadcasting is imagining also on the other end, the people that are listening to that person. So there's a whole world going on that is invisible, but very visible in people's imaginations.
I was raised on the radio, and they used to have programs on the radio. And when you heard Murder Mystery, you heard Superman, you heard these different things, you had to close your eyes and think, and you imagine what it was like. You imagine what the room looked like, and so on. The other thing that intrigued me was the sound effects man. And I have a little hand in sound effects myself most of my life, but that's the bug, the radio bug. Bill and I have spoken about it many times. You have that tonal quality in your voice for the radio, and that we've talked about.
Well, I agree with that, Anthony, and I want to say, as the founder of the name, the Fab Intro Show, and as friends of these two gentlemen, Anthony LoFaso and Vince Lapati, I'm very proud of where we've come and what we're doing now, because these are seasoned professionals in what they do. Not that we're paid for everything that we do. We're not. We just enjoy. We enjoy the passion of it. I started out in radio when a gentleman who was already in the entertainment industry as a singer, mandolin player, and had his own radio network that he had just formed. His name was John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, said to me, "Hey, Bill, you know, you have a great voice. I watch you speak and listen to you at the meetings that we were attending." At the time, we were attending meetings in the Italian-American community to determine what would be done with a very significant property in Little Italy, which ultimately was purchased and is now going to become the Italian-American Museum in New York City in Little Italy. So Johnny said to me, "You know, would you like to do broadcast on radio?" Well, I've never done that before, but I've always listened to radio. I love the radio, and I'm fascinated by what Vince just said about it's a matter of imagination between the broadcaster imagining and creating the images and the listener creating their own images, and the two of them kind of like having a meeting of the minds in a way, or a meeting of the imagination. So Johnny got me started first in a broadcast network called Centani Broadcasting, and that's where I met Anthony LoFaso when a mutual friend suggested to me that Anthony LoFaso would make a great guest on my show, the Bill Russo Show was called at the time. So I said, okay, I would, you know, I'd like to have him on the show. And it turned out we had a lot in common. And one of those commonalities among so many was the passion for radio. By that time, I had several shows under my belt. So I said, okay. And the rest is history. We developed a friendship based on our commonalities and radio. And then we went on to City World Radio. For 10 years, Anthony, 10, 11 years?
10 years. 10 years on the radio, and great radio. Mm-hmm. Great radio.
And now here we are broadcasting under a new format, which is the podcast. And podcasts have been on for a while, and we are really doing well with it, because I think we've built quite a number of relationships with people. And I think that happens. We were just watching some broadcasts of the Joe Franklin Show. And Joe Franklin, I guess, was the Joe Rogo, what's the name? Rogan, of his time, in that Joe Franklin could talk to anyone about anything at any time.
Right, and that was our goal, really, to see if we could do it, and we did, I think, fairly well.
So I'm very delighted that we're here, and we're talking with Vince Lipari, and we have many other guests, and I want to tip my hat to our sound engineer, Ed Panetto, because without the sound engineer that we have, who's wired everything up and who's listening now, who's monitoring us, and who may do some post-production, we wouldn't exist anywhere. So we're broadcasting from somewhere to everywhere. We were no one, we're some people, we're somebody now. So thanks very much to everyone. And Anthony, take it away.
Well, yes. Well, now after you began broadcasting at Beaver Falls, how did you eventually get into places where you became known?
Well, Beaver Falls, I worked there for a while, and then I worked for a lot of other little radio stations, 500-watt, 1,000-watt stations. I went back to Long Island, where my family was living, my mom and dad, and worked for stations out there, WGSM and WGBB. I also worked in Stamford, Connecticut. So I worked, and then I left the business and became a teacher. I did that for a while, then I went back to the business. And I was working for WGBB, which is in Merrick, New York, Merrick, Long Island. And I was a news director over there. And I knew someone who was forming a group that was pressuring New York City stations to get bureaus out in the suburbs and to report on what was going on in the suburbs. That was back in the 1979, 1980. And they were looking for talent. They were looking for reporters to man those bureaus. The first one would have been the one on Long Island. And so this friend of mine calls me, she was the head of the organization, and she told me that they are looking for a reporter to be the Long Island reporter to open up the bureau on Long Island. This was WABC. And I said, but I don't know anything about television. I mean, I know radio. I don't know anything about TV. I mean, I wouldn't feel qualified. Call anyway. Just go for the experience of having the interview. So I did. I called, and I went there for an interview. And to make a long story short, I kept telling the person who was interviewing me at the time, who was the news director of WABC. I said, but I really don't feel qualified for the, be on the air, but maybe I can do the assignment editor job. You know, I could do that. And he says, well, you know what, why don't you go out with our crew and a producer and we'll make you do a couple of things. I said, but I really don't. So I did. And then the tape came back. And then I got a call a couple of months later. And they said, we'd like to come in. You'd like to come in and do some more, another audition. You mean like for the assignment editor job? No, it was the on-air job. Kept telling this person that I wasn't qualified to be on television. But they kept calling me back. And then finally, they had me do like a stand-up in front of the Long Island Railroad train somewhere. A stand-up is when you talk for about 45 seconds or whatever, or a minute, to do a presentation. I did that. And then then after that, I did another thing where they actually sent me out on a story. Eventually, they called and they said, you got the job. And I said, you mean the assignment editor job? Is no, you know, to be the Long Island reporter on, WABC. So I was totally shocked. I kept fighting it.
Well,
I kept fighting, saying I wasn't qualified, and they kept calling me back. So
I'm learning this for the first time. I didn't realize that.
Great story.
Yeah. So you went to work for ABC.
Yeah, I worked for ABC and did that for 7 or 8 years, and then and which was a great experience. And then from there, I worked for a number of other stations. I worked for the evening magazine show on WOR and Discovery Channel. Our Current Affair, and a couple of other places.
Well, you know, your story is a good one, and we're going to have you back again for sure. You may come back when I can't come here for some reason.
I have a few questions I want to ask, Vince. When you get an assignment, when you're a TV journalist, as you mentioned, assignment in the field, and you learn about a story, let's say it's a tragic story, for one instance, it could be a good story, a happy story. How do you step out of the story, in a sense, and not get your own emotions involved in what's happening. You have to report the story, but, you know, and I always marveled at those reporters, especially when there's something tragic, that they don't comment or they don't express any emotion about what's happened.
Well, I think in today's world, journalistic world, sometimes you'll see some journalists break down on the air and actually show emotion.
Right.
I've seen that a couple of times, more than a couple of times on CNN with some of the reporters, where it's so tragic and so terrible. Mm-hmm. And when you're a reporter doing stuff that is emotional, you have to make a conscious effort to suppress that emotion and to cover it.
Right.
To cover it as factually and sensitively as you can. But the stories that were real killer for me were stories involving kids. Or kids that had been killed, or kids were sick, or whatever it might be. And, you know, we had a lot of many stories in different situations like that. But you always show empathy. Obviously, you show empathy to the people involved, right. The victims. You can't just go in there like a machine with a microphone and ask them questions robotically. You have to, you know, you have to empathize. And you do empathize. Because if not for them, it could be you or somebody else that you know in that position. But those stories are tough. Those are probably the toughest stories.
Well, I can say this, that I don't know what went on in those interviews that ultimately got you the job to be a field reporter, but you do show sensitivity and insight into the craft itself, reporting. I think that's fantastic. We're honored to have you here on the Fab Intro Show.
Thank you.
Yes, and I think that, if I remember correctly, our engineer, Ed Palmetto, said that he wants to do a half-hour program today. And so at this point, we're going to ask Vinny to allow our next guest, Dr. Ferdinand Visco, to come up to the microphone, and we're going to be speaking with him. But be sure that Vinny will be returning in future Fab Intro programs, and we'll make that transition now. And Bill, in the meantime, while they're making that transition, you became interested in radio between John and Ella, but you liked radio even before that.
Yeah, I loved radio. I was a channel dialer, you know. I would move from one radio station to the other. I loved the news stations, but I also listened to rock stations, the doo-wop stations. I remember the WABC Good Guys. They were on, I think they went way down on the dial on the AM radio. You know, so I just followed.
MCA was down, I think, in 590,
something like that.
590.
Yeah, so yeah. I just was fascinated. And the high school that I went to, Brooklyn Tech, had its own radio station, has its own radio tower still to this day. And I was always fascinated by it. The colleges that I went to did not have radio broadcasting capabilities at the time. CCMY, Brooklyn College, I don't think they did, but I also took some philosophy courses, but majored in urban studies with minors in economics and sociology. And I was blessed by that because I did combine a lot of my interests by working for the Housing Authority. So I'm just glad to be here and glad to welcome our next guest, who we met by chance through a mutual cousin who connected us. And this gentleman, his aunt married my uncle. We are unrelated, but we consider ourselves cousin-in-laws. And his name is Dr. Ferdinand Visco. Welcome to the Fab Intro Show.
Thank you, Bill and Anthony. You know, I'm very interesting discussion about radio. You don't know this, but I also have a radio background. I started a college radio broadcasting station.
Wow.
Called WVOF. I was going to Fairfield University at the time, and we had to decide what we were going to call the station. And we thought about WFU, but we didn't think that was good for a Catholic university to be called WFU, so we called it WVOF. And we had a 1-watt AM transmitter. And we stretched the wire from dorm to dorm, and that's what we did. And we had shows and stuff like that. And we also used, and the school was run by the Jesuits, it still is, and we used the radio station to prank the Jesuits. And one day we decided that we were going to have a book drop. So we notified everybody on campus that at 9:30 or so, during a radio program, we would have a countdown. And at the end of the countdown, everyone would take the largest book they had and drop it on the floor in the dorms. So we did the countdown. Boom! 400 books fell on the floor. The whole school sounded like it blew up. The security came, police came, fire department came. Everybody went to sleep. And nobody figured out what happened. And then they finally figured out what happened. And, of course,
the radio station. That was the end of the radio station?
Exactly. We were off the air for a week.
You're hearing this for the first time.
Yeah, the older you get, the more admissions come out, you know.
The truth comes out. Right. Well, Dr. Visco has been on our program several times and has always been very interesting and informative. And my particular recollection is when he was on the show the first time, his beeper went off, and I recall he looked at it and said, "Oh, I'll get that later." And you and I were concerned.
Yeah, I'll get it
now. The cardiologist's beeper going off. He said, you know, this show isn't that important. You can answer that call. So it was us a lot of fun, and we still have that recollection of that incident. So we'd like to have you. We're so happy to have you here, Doctor. And I know that you have many varied experiences, but right now you are speaking about your book. So tell us a little bit about it again, as if you've never been here before in your life, you never saw us, we don't know anything about it, and our audience knows nothing whatsoever.
Right. Well, my name is Ferdinand Visco, and I was formerly chief of cardiology at St. John's Queens Hospital and then at Metropolitan Hospital in Manhattan, retired in 2021, and enjoying retirement, enjoying my companionship with Bill and Anthony, and having a lot of fun in retirement. And I'm actually promoting Italian-American culture and history. And I wrote a book, a critically acclaimed book called Growing Up Italian-American. And it's selling well. It's kind of a life story, but it starts with the Risorgimento and works its way up to the current present day, and talks about my family and the stories of Italian-Americans coming here as immigrants to Ellis Island and during the war, especially during the Second World War, and how Italians dealt with that, Italy being part of the Axis. And so they had to deal with that and so forth. So it's been a journey, and I've enjoyed doing it.
And so when you conceived of this book, you were still working.
Right.
And you put this together, put all these different stories together from your family, from your parents and your uncle and your grandfather and so on. And it's extraordinary in the book, Bill and I talk about it all the time, that your family has an extraordinary level of accomplishment in that there is a certain number of doctors and pharmacists and dentists. So just give us that number again, inside of only a couple of generations?
Yeah, well, my grandfather came. He was a jeweler on my mother's side, and he his idea was that you needed to be educated. And he used to tell his children, he said, "Vai studi, vai legge," which means go study and go read. And he was enthralled with the medical profession, so much so that he had an artist paint on the ceiling of the boys' study room. He had the artist paint a Gray's Anatomy book and a microscope. So naturally, when the boys would lie down, they'd look at the ceiling and say, "Well, I wonder why Dad put all that stuff on the ceiling." Of course, they knew what he wanted, and he wanted them to be doctors. And he felt that if they were doctors, they would be able to defeat the prejudice. Because if you were a doctor, people had to come to you for help. And so that was his main idea. And so two of his sons actually became physicians. One son became a pharmacist. He had five sons, and they all became doctors. My mother became a pharmacist, and she had me, and I became a doctor. And so many, many others in our family became doctors, and children of children became doctors and so forth. And today there's like 25, if you count them all, 25 doctors can trace their medical careers, literally, to my grandfather's foresight.
And was your grandfather, I know he was a jeweler, but was he also educated?
No, he was educated in jewelry. He was a mason. His father was a mason, and he was taught to be a Mason. But then his wife's father was a jeweler, and he must have learned jewelry, the business, from his father-in-law. And then he went to Milan, learned how to construct watches, and went to Rome and learned gems and how to cut gems.
That's how he came across education.
Right.
He was educated in a different manner, but he understood that when you obtain that kind of knowledge, specific knowledge in medicine, dentistry, whatever it might be, that was the road to a different life.
You know, often on the Fab Intro program here, we have guests on our show who have, throughout their life and career, become teachers and mentors and have worked with young people. We've even had young people on the program. I'd like to ask questions that are non-conventional for radio or for journalists. During your career, what experiences have you had in training young people, and what differences have there been, whether they are, depending on the background of the young medical doctors, even nurses? Tell us a little bit about that experience, because ultimately, from my own experience, and I know from Anthony, whatever you do, if you do it well, you really want to share it if you're good at it, and you have a conscience and a sense for the future. So tell us about that part of experience of medical, being a medical doctor.
Yeah, well, teaching is really a passion, and I enjoy it. And being a teacher is really being an actor. I think, you know, you have to stand in front of a classroom and you have to entertain people at the same time impart knowledge. So I enjoyed that a lot. And I was a mentor to many, many medical students. I ran a fellowship program in cardiology for St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan, and then for Metropolitan Hospital and so forth. And I've trained 100 cardiology fellows, I guess, at least, and they are in positions of importance now in American medicine. But I graduated from the University of Padua in Italy. I don't regret going to the medical school in Italy. I had a reason to be in Europe, and it was great. And I came back, and now I'm professor of medicine here in the States. But the idea is, when I first came back, you know, I had to deal with graduates of American medical schools who had a lot more personal experience with American medicine. And so I used that knowledge of dealing with those problem when I mentored my fellows and stuff like that. So really, sometimes the fellows would be, or residents would come to me and really be dejected and feel sorry for themselves and feel that they can't make it, they don't know enough. And so I would just tell them, look, it happened to me too, you know. When I came back, I felt that a lot of people knew a lot more than I did.
And I still feel like that.
Right. And, you know, like the first day I was in the CCU, first year as an intern, they brought in a patient with arrhythmia, and the nurses came up to me and said, Dr. Visco, what should we do? And I said, geez, I don't know what the hell to do, you know, but they're asking me what to do. So I said, listen, what do we usually do? And they told me, and I said, that's exactly what we're going to do.
And so that was I always wondered about that the first time a doctor is by themselves,
right,
and there is a critical situation occurring, and you, nobody over your shoulder, no mentor,
right.
You're by yourself, it's late at night, you're not going to get in touch, it's up to you now,
right,
maybe to save that person's life. It's really a tough,
right,
tough
I spot. Also understand from your book, Dr. Visco, that you not only excelled after adjusting from the Italian educational medical experience, which in many areas is even superior to an American. So there's a balance to be met there, but that during your career, you developed some unique techniques for diagnosing patients' conditions based on certain testing and x-ray machinery, if you can just explain that.
Well, you know, we pioneered some of the work in nuclear cardiology. and echocardiography. And when I was a fellow, some radiologist showed me a ultrasound machine, and he said, this is great. Look, I could see something moving. Look, it's the heart. Look. I said, come on, forget about it. I mean, I was too busy listening to the heart with my stethoscope and recording those sounds, radio, whatever, you know, recording heart sounds, right? But later on, I saw the value of echo, and little by little, I learned echo and learned what it was, and then I began to experiment with it, and I grew with the field and became somewhat of a pioneer in echocardiography. So, you know, that was the way it was. And it's amazing where the science of medicine really is today, you know? So I'm happy to have been part of it.
Very good. Tell us the development over the years of the support staff for in medicine, having to do with the new, I guess it's not new now, but, you know, it's pretty common now, of physician assistant and the top level nursing career ladder. So there are a lot of young people who listen to our show. And what is the career ladder like in the field of nursing and physician assistant positions?
Yeah. Well, I think there is going to be a doctor shortage. You know, the graying of America, everyone is getting older, living longer, and there is a need for physicians. And so there have been now two types of people with licenses, licensed by the state, that can write prescriptions other than physicians. And they are physician assistants. Those are men and women who have graduated from college, who have maybe a degree in science, and then go to PA schools and spend 2 years in a PA school. And then kind of even specialize. I mean, when I was chief of cardiology, I had two physician assistants working for me, and they were really specialists in cardiology. I mean, and I trusted them. And of course, they consulted with me, and they wrote prescriptions, and we took care of many, many people. The other track, of course, is the nurse practitioner. These are nurses, licensed nurses, who then take extra training and then become nurse practitioners, and they're also able to write prescriptions and take care of patients. They have a little more leeway. They don't need a physician mentor behind them at all times. So they're more independent than the physician assistant. But these two groups of people are very important in the practice of medicine, and they are respected by physicians. Because they're well trained, and it's an apprenticeship, you know, it's really what you do, what you learn, and very helpful to us.
Is the variation between the physician's assistant and the nurse practitioner, is it very different, their training?
Well, the nurse practitioner has more of the caring approach because they come from nursing, right? And, you know, like that, right? The physician assistant is more of a scientist. So that's, you know, there's advantages. I mean, the laying on of hands is very important in medicine. And so the caring approach of the nurse practitioner is a very useful thing. And physicians and physician assistants have to learn empathy and like that.
Is this a way to now fill the gap between physicians, the lack of physicians or the shortage of physicians that you're alluding to, and you know, able to have people that do not everything, but a vast majority. I don't know how many things physician assistants can do how much they can't do. Mostly I know what they can do. They can do a great deal. Lots of offices, sometimes people don't even know. They go to see the doctor, and the doctor is a physician's assistant. I happen to know that personally because my son and his friends, they all go see Dr. Kelly. And when I went to see him, I learned that he was a physician. He's a very fine gentleman and very knowledgeable and practices every day for many years. And so by practice alone, he's seen a lot of patients, and he learns from that process.
Yeah. So that's true. And you'll find physician assistants manning emergency rooms commonly. You'll find in general practice, you'll find that they're doing triage, right? Basically, they'll figure out you need a gastroenterologist, you need a cardiologist. And the problem is that most physicians specialize now. So the general practitioner, the guy with a black bag that used to go to your house, no longer exists, unless he's a concierge doctor and you've got a lot of money and you're paying these concierge physicians to take care of you, you know? So it's a changing world. I don't know, and we were talking about that before among this group, Bill and Anthony and Vince, about artificial intelligence. What is that going to do to the practice of medicine?
Hmm.
You know, so I think it remains to be seen, you know?
Well, you know, artificial intelligence may be good in certain applications in terms of getting information and getting suggestions, but, you know, there's a danger in using artificial intelligence to tell you exactly or pinpoint and tell you what direction to take if the artificial intelligence is garnered from artificial sources. So that's something, you know, to be concerned about. But also artificial intelligence cannot cook. And I understand from your book that you cook, that you tell us about some of your cooking abilities.
Right. Well, you know, I was an only child, so my mother taught me how to cook. And in the Italian culture, you know, a man cooking is fine, you know, and that's to be expected. Of course, the holiday meals are usually prepared by the female, you know, the female gender, but Italian American men cook. And I cook. And so, and in fact, you know.
That sounds like a T-shirt. Italian men
right.
cook. Italian
right.
men cook.
That's right. And you know, psychologists have figured out that when we grow up, we have these wonderful experiences with our family. And when we eat the food that they prepared, we have a memory, have some kind of food memory in ours. And so when we have those tastes, it brings back all those memories of family gatherings, that we've had together. And for example, I'll tell you, we make something called atashk. That's dialect for latasca, which is Easter pie or pizza ripiena or pizza gaina, whatever, pizza rustica, it's also called. It's kind of like a pie that you put eggs and cheese and salami and all kinds of things into this thing and you cook it. Every year we do this, my family and I. And we've had these recipes handed down to us from our parents, and my cousins have a similar. Everybody has a little different variation on the recipe. And we're all trying to find that flavor that we had as a child. And it's very difficult to find. Some years it comes through, and other years it doesn't. And it's so disappointing when we don't get that flavor because we're missing out on that wonderful experience that we had as children.
It's Roppa Vede.
Yeah.
Because I have the same thing with my grandmother's Sicilian pizza. I have not tasted it ever again. And I must have had Sicilian pizza in 1,000 places over the last 75 years or so. But it never tasted. Never tasted.
Well, you know, in the Italian culture also, food comes into the field of medicine, because for Italians, if you're sick or have an illness, it could even be a broken bone, Italians say, well, you must have been something you ate.
That's right.
But they also have cures.
And drink mineral water and
all that. There are also cures. And Dr. Visco had shared with me once the importance of mineral water to the Italian medical community in Italy.
Right. It's true.
So I'm hoping that both Vinny and, I'm sorry, Doctor, I'm hoping that both Vinny and Dr. Visco will return to the Fab Intro show in very short order. You know, we could go on and on here forever and ever.
I just need him to tell us about the mineral water quickly.
Okay, quick, the mineral water story.
All right, so if you go to Italy, even today, by the bedside of every patient, there's a bottle of mineral water. And that mineral water is particular for that disease. So when I went to medical school in Italy, we had to learn which mineral water was good for what disease, you know? And in fact, there is in Italy something called mal di fegato, which means
bad liver.
Bad liver. I never found out what that is. Even in America, I don't know what mal di fegato. But in Italy, the cure is acqua minerale.
Okay. Now, when you were in the emergency room by yourself and the person came in with atrial fibrillation, Did you recommend mineral water at that time? Thank you so much.
What a great show.
Thank you both. A great show. And Bill, you have any final thoughts?
Well, this is a fantastic show. It's a cure for boredom. It's a cure for being languishing around your house or even in the car and not knowing what to listen to. The Fab Intro Show will hear for you to introduce you to so much in the world that can keep you going and keep you alive, keep you interested and keep you excited. So tune in to the next Fab Intro Show. If you have any suggestions, pass them along.
Thank you so much. So we'll say good night or good afternoon from Marine Park.
Thank you for tuning into the Fab Intro Show.
You're listening to The Fab Intro Show. Visit us on our website, www.fabintro.com. Thank you.